Dear Dhamma friends, today is the third day in our retreat, and accordingly the third Dhamma talk we are going to have. So may everyone settle down for the Dhamma talk and give the consent with three times sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato samma sambuddhasse. නමෝ තස්සේ භගවතු අරහතෝ සම්මා සම්බුද්දස්සේ නමෝ තස්සේ භගවතු අරහතෝ සම්මා සම්බුද්දස්සේ කතමේ තයෝ ධම්මා බහුකාරා සත්පුරුෂ සංසීවෝ සද්ධම්මස්සවනං ධම්මානුධම්ම පටිපන්නාති තී Dear Dhamma friends, as I introduced in the first day as well as in the early part of the yesterday's talk, is a kind of a presentation from Venerable Mahasariputta. It's a kind of a compilation or tabulated form of the entirety of the teaching of the Buddha. We have taken a little piece, part and partial of that particular sutta known as the Sutra Sutta. Now we are on the book of three, and they are the first question Venerable Sariputta is asking in order to point it, in order to direct the attention, what are the three things one must know which are more helpful. The first thing he enumerates after the question himself, he says, association with a true person or association with a noble person or friendship with a noble friend. And the second thing is listening to the true Dhamma. That means something here and now under your very nose and which is more leading to liberation than frustration. And that is what we discuss yesterday. So the last one is Dhammanu Dhamma Patipada. Patipanna, that means practicing the Dhamma to its entirety. That is the part which is going to give more practical or towards results. So first, association with a good friend or true person and listening to his instructions or listening to his Dhamma are preliminaries for someone to start. Otherwise, you can start it, but never it will give a gradual training. So therefore, one has to listen to get the correct perspective. Sometimes it is being called as Sammaditti. The Buddha himself mentioned there are two preliminaries or causative factors for someone to have the correct view. Sammaditti. Dveme bhikkave paccaya sammaditti upadaya katame dve paratocha ghoso ajjata yoniso manasikaru. O monks, there are two proximate factors for a person to arouse the correct view. That's listening to someone who knows. That's the essential part, because our natural mind never inclined towards this gradual training or to the mindfulness. So always searching outwardly, never inwardly. So therefore someone has to give it in an emphatic way. So that is why you have to listen. It is not, or it is never with natural selection. Second thing is, ajjata yonso manasikaro, you must have wise reflection. Whenever people present so much of proposals, so much of projects, how to make out the true Dhamma, you must have wise reflection. Sometimes it is translated as radical reflection. You must be radically reflect upon, otherwise naturally you will be carried away for mere pleasure principle, and then and there immediate pleasure or sensuous pleasure. in avoiding all kind of thing, you too have this gradual training starting from here and now, is always you are the final decision maker. You can't find fault with others. So therefore, when and where someone is presenting, it is just a suggestion. You are the one seconding it, then only it become valid. So your seconding or your appreciation and putting into practice is completely independent. It is up to your sovereignty. So therefore, see whether you have the radical reflection or wise reflection. Otherwise, you have no rights to find fault with others. Because each and everyone has their own presentation. Each one is presenting this and that. Amidst of all kind of things, Buddha is also there. And whether you are selecting what the Buddha is teaching or other people preaching, is up to you. So therefore, your wise reflection is important. And that very wise reflection or radical reflection is highly put into value, put into practice in this Dhammanudhammapatipada, that means practicing of the teaching to its entirety, because we are always doing things with half-hearted mind, started with grandeur opening ceremonies, never patient enough to see the destiny, halfway done. So these are the things that we call consumerization, and ultimately you are wasting or whiling away time, never see the end. So when and where you have the true friend, the true friend is, or noble friend, or noble association, always ask you to be patient. Take the simple task and continue. And for that, not enough to have one sermon, not enough to have one Dhamma talk, repetitively you have to listen. It is something like pouring water to a growing plant. So you have to, as far as its root system get the touch with the water level, groundwater level, you have to add water like that. The listening also important, and meanwhile you have to grow. That growing, Dhammanudhamma Patipada, or practicing to its entirety, simply put into three restraints. The moral restraint, concentration restraint, and wisdom restraint. So, sila sikha, samadhi sikha, pajna sikha. O sila patipada, samadhi patipada, pajna patipada. So, the foremost thing is, you have to be a moral person, cultured person, gentle person. Otherwise, you are not qualified to make your mind calm and quiet. Gentle person means, cultured person means your physical and verbal behavior is quite social, quite cultured, gentle. Then only you can expect the mind to be calm. So therefore, when and where you facilitate moral restraint, you see the result of it as a somewhat calmness of your mind. The Buddha put it in this way. He says, avipatisarathaya ananda kusalani silani. O Venerable Ananda, whenever you maintain your morality in a skillful way, your mind will not get scattered off. Mind will not be desperate. Mind will not be scattered. So therefore, your moral restraint must make sure mind is become more calm and serene and quiet than when you are immoral. So that is the point where we get social benefits or ethical benefits. If the person wish to practice Dhamma for its entirety, first and foremost is he or she has to reconsider physical and verbal behavior. It must be gentle, affable, and when it is growing, he or she then and there will get the calm and serene mind, and therefore easy to concentrate upon one object for a long time. That is simply put as the concentration. So in the meditative life, whether you are inside meditator or serenity, first and foremost thing is the concentration. So therefore, when and where you associate the true person, when and where you listen to Dhamma, it is really coming to being when and where you go and take the concentration training. That is what we call meditation center. That is the way the Buddha prescribed. Either you have to go into a forest or under a tree or in a solitude place. So when you go there, you are naturally restrained in morality, because you are dissociation from the society. And if at all any association, they are also fellow meditators, so easy to maintain your morality. And then you are being prescribed to do sit and meditate and walk and meditate and to be mindful in the day-to-day activities. That is the part we call the second part, or concentration restraint. But if you look at the Buddhist world at large, hardly any person once become moral restraint, take this concentration restraint, they stop dating generosity, dana, and the moral restraint sila is enough. They don't know to practice Dhamma to its entirety. So therefore, if you take the world population, how much percentage know Buddhism, how much Buddhism percentage follow the Buddhism, it's a very little fraction. Of course, in the figures, half of the population is Buddhist. That is how they present. They take whole China and India and small countries like Sri Lanka, the Burma, Thailand, and other countries are Buddhist. But if you see clearly, more than 95% are Mahayana Buddhists. They never believe the liberation in this very life or Nibbana in this very life. This is, they are Bodhisattva, so they are waiting for each and every person to become Buddha till that they will practice Mahakaruna or Great Compassion than Mahapanya. But the Theravada, we put in another way, we think even now it is possible, therefore we must strive through. And so therefore maybe less than 5% believing that Theravada tradition. So now when you are taking the Theravada country like Sri Lanka, how much of the Sri Lankan population practice meditation is maybe less than 5%. Among the total population of the world, less than 5% believe Buddhism or heard about Buddhism. Amidst of Buddhist people also, how much they go for Dhammanudhamma Patipada or practice Dhamma for its entirety, that's almost the same like population. So therefore you have to see it in that perspective. That is why it says not Dhamma Patipada, it is Dhammanudhamma Patipada, not mere for the namesake. You have to go in deep. So that great step is, after you become a moral person, cultured person, and ethical person with ethics, then if you are not going for meditation, it is not worthwhile to say Dhammanudhamma Patipada, because from the morality or moral restraint to the concentration restraint is a big hurdle, a bottleneck. Only the yogis, after taking precepts and coming to the meditation center, when and where they go and sit on the cushion, then only the real battle start. They find they are monkey mind. As far as they are at home, as far as they are other world, outer world, outwardly, the monkey mind you can't understand. Moment you come and sit, you make a determination not to do any willful physical work or mental work, and you keep the body in a comfortable position, at least at the beginning, and then observe the mind. And when and where you are not engaged in conscious work, when and where you are not engaged in conscious talking, then you can see the mind. It's such a monkey mind. Therefore, many go into this, taken up of this concentration training, they find, I am not a suitable person to meditate because my mind is so much with wandering, bewilderment. So they think or they wait till the mind to be calmed down to start meditation. Because they think, this is not the good time, this is not the good place, I am not the good person. So therefore many taken up with this concentration training often get discouraged because they have not listened to Dhamma, they have not observed the true person or noble person, and they are not enduring enough, patient enough to understand whenever you take concentration training only, you understand the bewilderment of the mind, the monkey mind, and as far as you are with the sensuous pleasure, as far as you are with the pleasure principle, you can't understand. So imagine if someone to convince another person to say, understanding one's monkey mind itself is a great achievement of meditation. So that is being taught to me whenever I go to Nilambe as a layperson. I also used to complain about this monkey mind. Mind is wandering. Then Godwin used to say, you know at least about yourself up to that much. When and where you sit and make conscious effort not to make willful action, not to make willful physical and verbal action, then only you can see monkey mind. So therefore, how much you must listen to Dhamma, how much you must associate a noble person to understand the monkey mind itself is a result of your meditation. Otherwise, you may live the whole life without understanding how is the mind when there is no physical action and when there is no verbal action. And many of the meditators, instead of accepting it, they make themselves busy. They make them talking, and ultimately they consider this is the way out for monkey mind, but that will be just a postponement, or we call escapism. Instead, if you are to accept this monkey mind, then you see whatever the morality you have, whatever the etiquette you follow, mind never listen, mind never cultured. Mind have no moral shame. There's no any moral fear. So that is what you have to, it's like a bitter medicine, you have to accept it. So how much you must have interviews, how much you should undergo training to accept, you can extrovert behavior of the physical and verbal, you can do something. Or moral restraint. But when you go to the concentration restraint, you see the mind, it is just like a wild buffalo taken out of a wilderment and taken to a village and tied into a strong tree or a pole, then you can imagine how we is the buffalo. Or wild bird put into a cage, or a fish taken out of water, then something like that. So whenever you try to express your monkey mind, whenever you try to express your bewilderment in a meditative group, everyone will assure you all the rest of the meditators are the same. So therefore, if you are talking it with the non-meditators, they will put you into asylum, telling you are mad. Of course you will run mad. If you are going and talking this nonsense with these outside people. Instead, if you are talking with the true person, if you are talking with the noble friend, he will say, understanding that you can control somewhat your physical and verbal behavior, maybe for 5 minutes, but understand the mind. No control. So it's a noble thing to accept it. You may be hiding it and live like a gentleman or just like any kind of a cultured person, but when and where you fallen sick, what happened? When and where you become old age, what happened? When and where you at the death bed, what happened? This mind is going to overtake. Once taken, no mercy. So therefore, it's how nice when you are in the, you are healthy, when you are in the able-bodied age, not nearing the death, if you can understand the mind that you are fostering, that you are fertilizing, that you are feeding, is such. It never think about one's own benefit, never for one's own well-being. To understand it, you must have repetitive Dhamma talks. You must have repetitive intercourse with true person. And ultimately, when and where you try to accept it, the Buddha mentioned the monkey mind or this wandering mind is nothing but the perception of sensuous pleasure. Even you got rid of the sensuous pleasure, it is the materialistic part. The mind is always with the perception of the sensuous pleasure. It is called kama sanya. Kama sanya come and attack you in fivefold way, that five hindrances, so much so you deprived of your materialistic sense pleasure. Now it's shadow of that or perception of that appear like wandering mind. So you have to accept it. At least you are now away from the sensuous pleasure. So whenever sensuous pleasure is not there, sense perception is coming and attacking you, so you have to accept it. And once accepted, now it's a problem or it's a question to the Buddha, not to you. You have to ask Buddha, Vante, now I understand my monkey mind, what should I do? Then the Buddha says, take refuge of a materiality. Oh, rupa nimitta, rupa kammatthana, oh, your very body. So much so, Buddha is introducing mindfulness on your very body, or on your very posture, or when on your very breath, or on your very left leg and right leg. This is to represent the materiality. More and more you believe to keep the mind in face-to-face with your sitting posture, or in face-to-face with your in-breath and out-breath, or any metabolic activity happening inside the body, or while walking, the walking posture, or left leg and right leg, what is touching, that is called rupa, that is called materiality. So much so, when and where you keep the attention, of course, with full of effort, repetitive application to the materiality, so much so, mind is free of bewilderment. Mind is free of this monkey mind. So, when we were in Melbourne, we had some kind of a open discussion. One child asked, Bante, when I come and sit, mind is running, mind is flying, mind is outwardly, what can I do? Then I told how Upandita Sayadaw is answering this question. He told, imagine a bottle with very tiny opening mouth, something like odicolon bottle or like a scent bottle, and inside there are some air. So if you are to get rid of this air, what can you do? Two things you can do. Either heat it. When you are heating, some of the air will come, but others are remaining. But if you can fill water, so much so, it will replace the same volume of water, the same volume of air will be get rid of. But being its mouth is too tiny, very difficult, even if you put into the water, water will never go into. Even you keep it under the tap, water will never go into. So what you have to do is, you have to insert a small wick or a thread and put a vessel above the water bottle, the empty bottle, and let the wick take little by little or drop by drop into the bottle, so much so air will be replaced. Likewise, whenever you see your bottle full of monkey mind, if you wish to replace it with materiality, that is to say your breath, that is to say your sitting posture, or left leg and right leg in walking, whatever may be, but to repetitively make sure next thought moment also with the breath, next thought moment also with the breath, noting, and one by one, little by little, drop by drop, when you fill your stream of consciousness with the materiality, so much so you can get rid of these wandering thoughts. Not only that, you can get rid of disturbing sounds. You can get rid of your bodily pains. So that is the task. Simply we can say that is meditation. So you can understand, you may be very skillful person in outside world. You may be a meritorious or gifted person. But putting one drop by one drop into the tiny bottle, you are a beginner. You have to reborn. You have to behave like a beginner. You can't rush. There you find you are not even at the Montessori level. Because you have to learn like a child. How to put one drop more. How to put one noting in breath and out breath. How to put one step more. And so much so you can get rid of this wandering mind or disturbing sounds or disturbing pain, bodily pain. So it takes long time. After practicing, they say it is painfully slow. It is yes. For each and everyone, it is yes. But it is sure and short. If you put one drop of water inside, so much of air will be replaced. Likewise, note it again and again. That is called not only the bare attention of how to be mindful here and now, how to maintain it for consecutive thought moments, or along with your stream of consciousness, you have no any ammunition, you have no techniques. You have to do everything conducive, everything facilitating it. And when you are doing, you see, more you take time, more ways and means you find it. And so much so, you find repetitive application of the kammatthana or object of meditation, or your in-breath and out-breath as an example, you learn kind of a skillfulness, kind of a familiarity, kind of a ways and means from your mistakes. Nothing but through your mistakes. So ultimately your mistakes become your own friend, because all the mistakes are accepted in this meditative life. You have to be very sympathetic. And when you are practicing one day, or on the way, by the way, you may understand, now I can maintain the mindfulness consecutively for 3-4 cycles of breaths, or 3-4 cycles of rising and falling of the abdomen, or 3-4 cycles of left leg and right leg. And only meditation instruction is, how to increase it 3-4 times into the 5-6 times, 6-7 times, like when you are increasing, you see, are bound to see, if the mind is bewildered, monkey mind, your penetration into the object is less. More and more you penetrate into the object of meditation, monkey mind become less. So you see reciprocal relationship. So more and more you go there, not only you associating the primary object, so to say, in-breath and out-breath, you are getting a chance to keep the in-breath and out-breath face-to-face for longer time, so you can have more characteristic features or discrete understanding. This is in-breath, not out-breath. This is completely different from out-breath, and what are the intrinsic features? What are the personal features, individual features of the in-breath and the out-breath? So it is just like physics. Just like you keep one item under a microscope and you observe it longer, more immediate, more higher magnification, you can see more you go closer, object become completely different. Imagine a drop of water, if you keep under a microscope at the magnification of 5, you can see the shape of the water drop. But when you go magnify by 10%, 40%, you see inside this water, if it's a dirty water, like a zoo, so much of beings, so much of germs, so much of living things in the water, by looking at your naked eye, or 5% magnification, 10% magnification, you never believe. If you put a drop of blood, and if you have to see 40%, it's like a full of sand, so much of particles. You never see under your naked eye. You will see the red in the naked eye, but under the magnification is yellow. And completely different. Likewise, whenever you gotten rid of this wandering mind and monkey mind and know the art of go and plunge and penetrate into the object change its shape, change its manner, change its characteristics so fast. Ultimately, it becomes unbelievable. You feel vomitish. You feel nauseatic. You feel giddy. You feel moving, wavering. And everything happened. So that is why it says, again, you have to come back, go again. Come back, go again. Day by day, as far as this concentration, one-pointedness increases, you find the same object. More you keep in view with, face to face it, and more you go immediate, is so much of the changing of its face value. Go deeper, so as far as you are observing the same thing again and again, you can't disbelieve. You have to believe it, because it is repetitively, you can see, it is scientific. You can ask any person to come and see, hey, come and look. So much of the convention convince you get it, and that become a hobby, so much so you are away from the wandering mind, daydreaming, fantasizing, and distractions. So this is the part we try to experiment in a residential retreat. And that is enough. Not that it is the entirety of the teaching, but this enough for some one person to say, if instead of jumping from one object to another object, that is what you call sensuous gratification, take hold of one object and associate it for longer time with the idea, day by day, I will come immediately with that, penetrate into that, and see again and again, then you may see how quickly its facets, different facets or different shapes, different manners, and that part, no, not a single other religion is talking about. All the other religions are talking about mystics. All the other religions are talking about believing, but here onward it is not mere believing, or it is not an unfounded believing. This can, you can do it in the experimental basis, or we can say scientific basis, but the science is completely outwardly, this is inwardly. So therefore, you can see your understanding about your own breath, about your own sitting posture, about your own left leg and right leg, about your own walking posture. It is free of charge. Whenever it happens, or rather you may say, whenever you put yourself into this practice, you get the cumulative effect, how much you can see the object, when and where it is observed closely, when and where you associate for longer, so much so, within the same single object, you find the whole universe. Or so to say, when and where you observe this so-called breath, within the breath, whole world you can explain. You have nothing to go to the other worlds or other galaxies or nothing to use telescope and microscope. That very repetitive application going to give and you understand whole world is a holographic presentation. Single tiny thing is represent the whole world. So instead of going into the single tiny thing, that you can end it by itself. If you are going to look outside, you will get exhausted. It is natural. You will get tired. It is natural. So that is why the Buddha says, instead of searching for outwardly, entirety on the outside, take one single object and go into. And when you are going there, your mind is undergoing a kind of a evolutionary change. The mind itself can't sustain it. Mind never believe that your body, your single materiality is leading so much. So many people develop lot of perceptions. They start to see lights. They start to hear sounds. They start to feel smells, tastes, and bodily movements, and crawling animal everywhere in the on the body, and mind makes so much of hallucinations. So if you are not really associating the true person at that time, if you are not really associating the noble friend at that time, you may think you get a magical power, extrasensory perception, or you may think you are mad, or you may think unbelievable anything. That kind of a change is going to take place. That is the place where teachers are asking the meditators to keep in a, maintain the same timetable and let the mind to comprehend it little by little, because it is like you are born and brought up in this world with full of gravity, and now you are going to learn how to live in the gravityless area. That means in the space 6 miles away from the earth, completely different thing. No air, no gravity, everything is floating, so your body can't live. The astronauts, when they go out, they say, if you live 1 month outside in the gravityless area, your skeleton become 1/10 weaker by 1/100. Because over there, not necessary to have a skeleton, because everything is floating. So your calcium deposits and exercises, everything is going to be nil. And when you come back to the earth, you will collapse. Because your skeleton, day by day, it is get hardening when you are walking, when you are holding your weight. Imagine when you are put into this gravityless area, exactly the way, when the mind is thoroughly engaged with one particular object, it is without any desire, no any one-upmanship, no, not necessary to have egocentric idea. So under such circumstances, the mind becomes something or someone try to live in gravityless area. So again, when you come back, you find the world mad, mad, mad world. Changing and chasing again and again different visual objects, different sounds, different smells, different tastes, different tactile sensation, luxuries, and pet ideas. And that is what we call the development in the outside world. But when you go to particular one thing at a time and that done well kind of a thing, and over there, whatever you experience, you get a huge communication gap with the sensuous beings. That's what happened to the Buddha himself. But after hesitation, he decided, anyway, I will proclaim, those who have clear eye, those who have the radical reflection, they will accept it. Otherwise not. Otherwise they will simply reject it. Because 99%, 9999 of the population is accepting the gravity. They don't know, they can't comprehend the gravityless area. So if someone go outside and come back and going to say, I experience is true, no one will believe. It is natural. So that is how, when and where you put your the Dhamma into entirety, not only outside reaction, within yourself the reaction happens, because your likings and disliking utterly get smashed. It says what you like, whatever the things you like, is utterly destroying your peace of mind. What the Buddha put it in a simple way, any suffering came to you through your desired object, not the unknown object or undesirable thing. So desired object, tanhai jayati soko, tanhai jayati bhayang, and anything you suffer for the moment because of something you have selected already. Imagine the place you have choiceless awareness, no specific selection, and then you get a kind of a gravityless space, and then your skeleton become weaker. Slowly, slowly it becomes weaker. So instead, Dhammanudhamma Patipada is, again you come back to the sensuous world and again go into this one-pointedness. Again come back to the sensuous world, go to the one-pointedness. There, mind gets a kind of a synchronization or acclimatization, and that area is very critical. You have to facilitate it. It is just like a woman become pregnant for the first time. If you wish to have a child, she must have all the precautions, and she do not know. Only the parturated woman or elderly woman come and say, this is conducive for your pregnancy, this is not conducive. And just like you become pregnant, whether male or female, and there you have to receive the instructions again and again, because your normal day-to-day behavior, food, everything is, you have to reconsider now. If you are really fostering, if you are really facilitating it, so this is the concentration training. It has to go again and again. But when and where you come back to the sensuous world, it is natural, you have to go back and have interaction, because you need food, you need shelter, you need clothing. For that you have to have the relationship with the world. They are so quick adopting or changing into this material, only the concentrated on the one single object, and living with the sentient beings, it's a huge exercise. And unless otherwise you do not know the vipassana, unless otherwise you do not know the insight, you make friction, you make problem, and ultimately society will reject you, thinking that you are mad. They will put into the asylum. So there you have to use common sense, because other people are not meditators. They are sentient beings. They are always craving. They are always one-upmanship. I am the better person. Always thinking the self-centered thinking. But you are the one practicing, so therefore don't show other people that you are practicing. That is a simple way. Otherwise you are asking for trouble. So these people cannot change. They are utterly idiots. They are utterly dogmatic. They are utterly with the blinkers. They can't look whole range, but you can see. So therefore you have to use tactics whenever you come back to the common sense, living with the normal beings. And whole Tipitaka, Whole Sutta Pitaka is nothing but teaching you how to preserve your spirituality, how to preserve your concentration, how to preserve your mindfulness, how to preserve your precision, how to preserve your diligence, how to preserve your vigilance with this idiot word. It's a completely different thing. Very, very jollyful, jolly good thing anyway. It is a hobby-like. But if you misfire, they will vehemently attack you. When you go to the meditation world, you can see some people go like skyrocketing and then next day collapse. Because they are bragging. They are showing off. They take this as a something to be brag about. But if you are going to practice Dhamma to its entirety, you can't do away with the common sense. Don't think that going into the forest and I will get enlightened and come back. Never. You have to have the interact with the people. While having the interact, if you lose the common sense, you are utterly at lost. So don't assume. Just try to understand, I am a human being. I am undergoing some kind of a evolution or revolution or metamorphosis. So it is my duty to keep the relationship with others. They are idiots. They are utter narrow-minded people. Don't expect anything out of them because they are very short-tempered people. So association, you can see the Buddha. Morning he take the bowl and go to the village and get the bowl filled and say, Sukhi Hotu, may you be healthy, wealthy and happy. Soon the bowl is filled, he go to the forest and live the whole rest of the day completely solitude, unless otherwise someone come and ask question. So morning he go out of compassion, live with the people. Whole evening he go to the forest and facilitate wisdom. So this is the way, these are the tactics you've learned by reading the Tripitaka or maybe reading the Sutta Pitaka, how to deal with this external world and not to get disturb your mindfulness or concentration or diligence and vigilance. So that is a kind of a art only belongs to the enlightened beings or say the noble people. They will share with you without any hesitation, if you follow suit, if you follow not to brag, but to maintain your regular practice, and then you understand, not in a single university on the earth, not in a single school, not a single parent, not a single teacher is teaching that. They are teaching you to be conceited. They are teaching you to be self-centered, egotistic. They are teaching you to be get the lion's share, grab hold. So they are fighting each other like animals. But when you go to a noble friend or noble person, you see, they are giving the teaching by a silent sermon, kind of a vibration telling, be contented with whatever you have. Learn the art of telling enough. And don't fight with people, but don't try to correct them also. Then you ask in trouble. But they don't know this alternative. So therefore let them have it. But whenever someone come and ask you, if the time is mature, if that particular person is serious, tell them. And if you tell the wrong person, it is not his question, problem, it is your problem. So that is how the wisdom training, or so to say, Vipassana is happening. So unless otherwise you have the moral restraint to a satisfactory level and the concentration restraint to a satisfactory level, you are not qualified to take up the wisdom training. And when and where the wisdom training happened, you can imagine what was my life before I understand mindfulness. What was my likings and disliking before I take up this mindfulness. What was my personality trait or achievement or target before and how was it is now happening? Which is such a big evolution. big revolution it is happening, and some people think it is impossible nowadays. Even Buddhists, others beyond the Theravada tradition, not a single person believing such evolution is possible, they think it is a job of the omnipotent, omnipresent God or Brahma. It is none of human. But when you practice, go into the wisdom training, you see, you are the creator. You are the creator of suffering. You are the creator of liberation. So each and every moment is critical. So therefore, get ready, get prepared, get trained to the moral restraint, concentration restraint, and be alert, be vigilant, be diligent to the each and every moment, just to have choicelessness. Don't have the partition, this is better, this is not better, but just accepting as it is. And for that, within yourself, never naturally it happens. Only by the grace of the or silent sermon of the true person or the noble person, you can see they are showing enough. But we never see it as the best natural selection. So ultimately you start kind of experimenting or start kind of testing your own life just to be a human, just to be a innocent, not to be smart, not to be arrogant. When and where arrogance happens, your innocence gone. You are thrown away from the paradise. Whenever you become innocent, back at paradise. Just like a baby before the age of 6, they are very innocent. Even though you find this a very difficult task, babies are showing they are very innocent. They are not assuming anything. They have the choiceless awareness. I also had that age, and we consider it is infants. We consider it is something undeveloped. So more what you have developed is simply the frustration. Simply the dissatisfaction. So some Westerners say the meditation or vipassana is bringing back to the child psychology. You become innocent. But the Buddha says the difference between the child and the enlightened being is the child do not know that he is innocent or it is innocent. But the enlightened one is being an arrogant person, being a choosy person, through practice to the entirety, says, now I can gotten rid of. I am again innocent. Therefore, he can entertain it, he can appreciate it. That is what the Buddha is telling, Dhammanu Dhamma Patipada, or gradual training. It is never endowment or gift. You have to earn it according to your friction, according to your frustration, according to your problem, you are sorting it out. Of course, two people never trod the same path, but there's a kind of overall pattern of the entanglement to disentanglement, egotistic to the non-egotistic, explainable to unexplainable, perceivable to unperceivability, which is happening. So we call that is spiritual. We call it is religious. So that is the spirit of the thing, the Buddha taught. So therefore, instead of telling it is impossible, instead of telling we have to wait till the next Buddha to happen, Maitreya Buddha, why don't you try and see to the effort put forth, so much so you get correspondent amount of lack of frustration. And this is the first and foremost sign. And when you are practicing, the moment you understand that you can do better, you can find ways and means within, that's the time you become worth calling a yogi or a practitioner. Till that, you are a beginner. So not that calling beginner is something humiliating you. Each and everyone has to start up from the zero. Everyone has to start like a beginner's mind. So Beginner's mind is the what I referred as the innocence. So therefore, any mistake you do in this path never punishable, because each and everyone has to learn through trial and error. So in the discussion, what we do is we share our mistakes. I did this and I got this, and you did this and you got this, and that is the way we can compensate Venerable Sariputta or Buddha. So when and where you express your meditative experience as it is, it's a definitely a mirror to the other participant of the discussion. So therefore, listening, sitting meditation, walking meditation, discussions, together with this moral restraint, are the only thing we can do. So therefore, make up your mind to facilitate with all the five aspects, so that whatever the seed you planted will come into maturity, branch out, and flowering and fruition will happen. So if we limited people is not going to do it, don't expect the sensuous beings to give a reconsideration about this kind of teaching. So we have already invested time and other assets, so therefore we are better off someone compared with the other people. So make you this opportunity at this talks and discussions and sittings and everything. I hope you will try your best to practice Dhamma to its entirety. With that remark, I would like to sum up the today's talk, and this will be the end of the series of talks also. Thank you very much for listening. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu.